The following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. Thank you for tuning in once again, and we will be discussing a multitude of real estate and tax topics today. Before we get started, I just wanted to remind you that just because we discuss certain tax strategies or investment projects, opportunities, that you need to speak with your existing advisors before you run off and try some of these things on their own, but may or may not apply to your facts and circumstances, or you may have misunderstood the content. So please get your current folks that understand your unique facts and circumstances to give you an idea of what you heard is in fact accurate for you. For those of you that don't have advisors, you're welcome to go to our website at baplanner.com and go to the forms link up at the top right, and then you can submit step one, form one, client profile, and with that information in hand, I'll be happy to have a phone call with you to give you some idea of if or how we might be able to sync up with helping you achieve your goals and objectives. So that said, one thing I wanted to circle back to, we've talked the last couple weeks about the Roth conversion, and you know, we've delved into the risk factors that apply to every syndicated investment. And by syndication, you may recall that that's where a group of people pull their funds together, and in the case of most of the projects we review and have consulted with our clients on, they involve multifamily apartment projects. But anyway, if you'll recall, I went through a variety of the 20 to 25 some odd risk factors that are in almost every private placement memorandum that's put out to the real estate community, depending on whether it's a 506B or C. B is one that you have to have a pre-existing relationship with to invest with that syndicator or that sponsor, that lead partner, common terms for that role. Or if it's a 506C undertaking, which can be solely for accredited investors, then those can be a bit more widely advertised and promoted. But in any event, the private placement memorandum is what I would refer to as the introduction to such investments, and identifies, you know, the nature of the project, the you know, typically the location of the property, how much the property is going to cost. Now, in some cases, it could be a more of a scenario where the property hasn't yet been identified, but usually you'll see the criteria that the project is looking for. But in any event, the possible risk or identified up front, and again, it's mandated by the SEC that these disclosures be made. And, you know, we look at that for a number of reasons, one of which is we're looking to help with the valuation of the fair market value of a particular project that perhaps one of our clients might be investing some of their retirement money in. And if they're investing pre-tax retirement money, such as a 401k or an IRA, the traditional flavor, where the taxes have not yet been paid, then we're always interested in what we might be able to convert the funds post-investment. So in other words, we invested the funds, now they're sitting in the project, and at that point, we're looking to see, well, is this an investment that we might enjoy significant discounts to value in the context of a Roth conversion? Because when you convert to Roth, you're going to pay tax on the fair market value of those pre-tax funds once they're into the investments in the Roth account. And, you know, if you have ever learned anything at all about valuing business interests or investments, you'll learn that private companies versus the public market companies, you know, New York Stock Exchange or NASDAQ, et cetera, private companies are not worth as much dollar for dollar, typically, for a number of reasons. And again, this is those 20 to 25 risk factors that are identified for every, at least in the case of real estate syndications, for investment in a real estate project. And we have significant discounts for a couple of things. I guess the two biggest are generally the lack of marketability or tradability. You can't easily sell or convey your interest to someone else. In fact, you may not be able to do it at all in most cases. And so that's a significant restriction on value, as opposed to, say, you go buy some shares of Apple, where you would be able to sell or trade those almost instantly, you know, as long as the stock market's open, and in some cases, post-close, right? But in any event, the other large discount is for lack of control, because when you buy a stock, you're buying such an insignificant piece of the company, unless you're, you know, Elon Musk or someone of that nature, where you can buy a controlling interest. So you get, again, significant discount because you don't set policy for the company. You don't have a say-so, truly, in where that company is headed, whether it's going to turn left or right, when it's going to sell, if it's going to sell, versus maybe refinance the asset instead of selling it. And so we have the significant discounts that we can typically convert pre-tax retirement assets invested in the real estate private partnership syndication arena at a fraction of what it would cost you tax-wise to do it while it's sitting in a Charles Schwab or UBS, Fidelity, etc., type account. And so for those of you that are thinking about real estate, investment grade real estate, and I'm not going to say you can't do it on your own, you most certainly could. Why would you, when there's so many options for you to learn from others, participate with others, etc., in the context of the syndicated option? And again, I don't want to disparage you going out and just buying some single family rental properties, but as we've discussed on the air before, the way we make money with single family real estate versus multifamily is markedly different. And you know, I think once you understand the math metrics, you'll agree that perhaps, especially if you're, I'm going to say mature, meaning later in life, in terms of your age, you really would prefer, I think, to have some of the utes, the young folks, get out of bed every morning to go manage those old Class C apartment renovation projects that turn those assets into much higher value, literally. I don't want to say overnight, but I'll say over the course of 6 months to maybe 2 years would be the typical, you know, if it's a heavy, what we call value add, where we're taking a beat up old apartment building that's got a lot of deferred maintenance and probably not the latest tech, you know, when it comes to smart home packages, things like that. But we can take those older assets, especially if they're in a great location, that with some upgrades, you know, appliances and bark parks, maybe garages or covered parking, smart home I mentioned earlier, maybe a media room, etc. We can provide the newer amenities and bring the rents for those units back up to a more market rate of rent, which theoretically will create a higher net operating income, or NOI. And the NOI is the critical metric, one of the two critical metrics, the other being the cap rate that an investor will seek, or a lender in the case of a refinance. So, but in any event, what I want to leave you with on this topic is twofold, is that the Roth option is significantly important today. And I know a lot of you are thinking, well, you know, hasn't the tax train that's barreling down the track been stymied a bit with Mr. Trump's election? Isn't he looking to cut taxes? And I would say, yes, he is. The ability for him to do it in the short time we've got left before we've spent the remainder of the discretionary part of the annual federal budget. And by discretionary, I mean the part that's not already spoken for. Most of the federal budget is already legally obligated to be spent on certain categories. You've got indexing that takes place on Social Security benefits, Medicare. And by the way, if you haven't heard me say it before, there's literally 10,800 people a day coming onto the Medicare rolls. Think about that. That's a lot of money that's already been designated out of the federal budget to be spent, not just for this year, for indefinitely. You know, I'm not sure when it starts to come down. It will, because, you know, the baby boomers are the current push into the new pond of those that are going to be covered. And I still find it intriguing and interesting at the same time, personally exciting, that Medicare has effectively become the health care plan of choice. And, you know, for those of us that had to join the national health care system, I guess that's a term I can use, off the exchange, or the market, as they say, with the Obamacare program, you know, every time I turn around, I realize how little access to health care I really have. You know, we're told we have access, but it's like a lot of things. If you have money, yes, you have access. If you don't, you really don't have access. I mean, unless your income is at a point where you get assistance, then perhaps you do. But Medicare covers a lot of things if you have the right combination of coverages and supplements or advantage options that you don't get on most of the exchange options. But in any event, the discretionary portion of the budget has dwindled dramatically over the recent past, with the extreme deficits that we've run, and it's not just Democrats, it's Republicans. The both parties do a unbelievable job of spending more than we take in. And for those of you that don't keep up again with what we discuss on a week-in, week-out basis, all the way out through 2034, according to CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, we are spending $2.1 trillion on average more than we're taking in. And just so you know the numbers, we're taking in approximately $5 trillion and we're spending north of $7 trillion each year. And so unless the taxes or the receipts go up, which they might, it depends on what else happens with tax rules. It's amazing how that, and the media gets this wrong most of the time. A tax cut doesn't mean we collect less tax dollars. I think that's the natural assumption, because you hear about how the wealthy are not paying their fair share, and yet the reality is more dollars find their way into the Treasury after most of the major tax cut acts that have taken place. And so it's all a matter of priorities and who's paying the tax, or in the case of Mr. Trump, the tariffs. I guess it's possible, or at least Mr. Trump thinks it may be possible, to do away with some of the tax burden on us people, as taxpayers, with the use of tariffs. And I hope he's correct. On the other hand, I also understand the math involved that says collections have to go up. We don't have a choice if we want to continue to spend as much as we're spending. And it's not just a little bit of cutting that's going to have to happen. And I get a little bit frustrated when I hear the Democrats say, well, we've got to make sure the wealthy pay their fair share. If we do that, or worse, if we tax them on their wealth, like I believe Senator Warren has proposed, all we got to do is tax the wealthy and we'll be fine. That'll give us enough extra funds to knock down the deficits. And then on the Republican side, I hear, well, we've got to quit giving money away. All the foreign aid we provide, that's money we ought to be spending on our people, which that's a good suggestion. I agree. We should take care of our own before we take care of many of the other nations out there that we do. But what I guess I would suggest is look at the numbers on those proposals, and you'll understand why it doesn't move the needle. Doesn't move the needle much at all on the current year. The cumulative debt number, $37 trillion now, it doesn't hardly nudge the needle, and it wouldn't change that much in the current budget cycle of any given year. It's going to take a more systemic change to some of our policies on what we're going to provide, what we're going to cover. Yes, the retirement age, or the full retirement age, will probably move upward a bit. And then certain benefits may be curtailed, whether it's Social Security, Medicare, or otherwise. Let's do this. Let's go ahead and take a break. I want to finish up. When we come back, we'll finish up with one last Roth topic regarding conversions, and then we'll move on. Okay, well, we'll circle back momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Grindstones and rhinestones have made up my life, but I'll shine like a diamond through sagging. Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-782-1900. That's 713-782-1900. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. That's Nathan at npross.com.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be A Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control and make it.
Okay, welcome back with more of this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And, you know, I was speaking about Roth conversions earlier, and I also mentioned the CBO 10-year economic outlook. And I just happened to check their website here on the break, and wouldn't you know it, the 2025 version is going to be released later today. So you too can read that before we talk about it next week. CRFB, it's Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. CRFB.org is where you can find that study or that forecast, etc. But on their site, well, okay, let me finish up with the Roth concept. You know, I get calls routinely about doing conversion valuations, and I we'll have a conversation, and it generally goes something along the lines of, well, what is it, why is it that you're wanting to do it this year as opposed to maybe waiting till next year or doing some last year? And understand, you don't have to convert all of your pre-tax funds at one time, nor, and this is what I think surprises most people, you don't have to terminate or otherwise divest yourself of the investment, at least within the context of the syndication arena that we work in. You know, if I've invested my money into a certain apartment building transaction, I can convert, and let's say I invested my pre-tax IRA money or 401k money, self-directed 401, that is, you wouldn't be able to invest your employer-type 401, large company, or any company with more than one employee. The solo K, which is a marketing term for self-directed 401 trust, the self-directed model allows only one employee, yourself and or your spouse are included as one. That's the type that you would be able to do a conversion of again, private syndication type investments. And in any event, you do it after you've invested the money. So you've rolled your money over. If you qualify to do a Self-directed 401, you've undertaken the rollover. We do this often, can help you with that if you're not sure how to approach it. And then at the point that you're ready to pay the conversion tax, let's say here in 2025, you decide now's a great time. I want to avoid that tax train that's coming down the tracks. Not sure whether it's going to be here, you know, next month or next year or 5 years from now, which is what most of the economic forecasts might show you. I want to be on the tax-free wagon at that point with regard to my distributions out of my 401. By the way, when I ask people, well, how much do you have in your 401 if it's pre-tax, I'm going to get an answer back. Let's just pick one. I'll get answers all over the board. But let's say somebody says, well, I've got $2 million sitting in my 401k. I think that'll be enough because I probably could live till I'm 87 or 88, which is the current life expectancy from the IRS's table for a female. Male is 85 to 86. And so, you know, I'll hear, well, I think I can make it that far on $2 million or even less. Well, and then I ask them, I say, well, where are you going to get the other $1 million or so? And they say, well, what do you mean? I said, well, $2 million isn't yours, right? You haven't paid tax on that yet, if I understood you correctly. In which case, I see that look of shock come over their face because they realize, oh, I guess I'd forgotten about that. And so you're up against two risks there. You're up against the tax rate risk, and then you're up against the longevity risk of what if you live longer than 85 to 86. You know, I saw where Mr. Baseball, I don't know if we have any baseball fans listening in, but Bob Uecker, you may remember him as the voice of the Milwaukee Brewers, and he played for a short while. I believe he was a catcher, if I remember right. Goes way back. He just passed away at 90. Well, 5 years over and above the, well, in his case, 10 years as a male, that's a long time to have to pay your bills, even if you own your home. And by the way, do we ever really own our home? You know, try not making your property tax payments for a year. See what happens, okay? We never own our home, and it's one reason that I remain a proponent in many cases, many situations, in fact, patterns, of renting. The Florida Atlantic University's rent versus buy index still shows renting is a better economic or financial option in most major markets in the United States. Renting is less expensive than buying when you're looking at equivalent amenity sets. So, you know, comparing renting a single-family home or an apartment, especially the newer apartments that are really up to date with regard to all the amenities I mentioned earlier, and not to mention the lifestyle choice. I know in Houston, we've got many downtown high-rise options now. And in fact, I haven't read any reports about it lately, but I know it's about a year ago that the BP tower out off of Katy Freeway, I can never remember if that's Eldridge or one of the other north-south corridors. I believe it's Eldridge. That building is being converted to a high-rise apartment building, and the pricing, at least at the time it was announced, was said to be similar to what a new Class A four- or five-story type building might go for, which would be interesting if that concept makes it in Houston. I would love that concept, and especially, you know, if it's like so many places where I live in in Bangkok, Thailand, where, you know, the high-rise buildings are incredible, and you can rent them for so much cheaper than you would be buying one, and, you know, you're relatively unfettered in terms of, you know, being able to move or change directions. You know, you need a standalone villa at some point. We call them villas over there. Maybe you're like my wife and you wanted a yard for your child to run around in. And otherwise, boy, I'm for renting and I'm for doing it in a downtown area with a Starbucks in the ground floor and a 7-Eleven right there next to it. And we got a lot of those over there. And I don't know, it seems like as we get older, or as I get older, convenience becomes the dominant metric on what I'm seeking. And but Houston's got that now too. And in any event, the ability to rent for less than it costs to buy is a big deal. But and anyway, when I look at the math about what's coming, and I tend to, the lines blur between Democrat and Republican again, and I understand, you know, we've got a Republican now, thankfully, that's looking to reduce the tax on my Social Security that'll be starting at some point over the next few years. And and not only that, he's wanting to do what I think are a lot of other good ideas. You know, no tax on tips. I think that's a great idea. And several other things. I can't remember all the tax-related issues. But bottom line is, I haven't heard him talking about raising taxes at all. And I know I've got that little nagging thought in the back of my head that we're going to be running out of the discretionary part of the budget, the part we get to argue over every year as to whether we're going to fund, parades for assorted, the constituencies, whether we're going to do this study or that study. I mean, all the things that hopefully Doge with Vivek and Elon will hopefully cut out or cut way back, but the money is disappearing. It's evaporating almost into thin air. So in any event, I noticed there's an article here on the site when I was looking around earlier about the Congressional Budget Office has some ideas about how we can reap some Medicare savings. I'm hopeful that Doge is looking at things like this, because it's going to take a lot of savings to offset some of these costs. Let me read you just a little bit. And by the way, this article just came out yesterday, so it's hot off the press, very fresh numbers, at least as fresh as they can be in a 14 trillion dollar expenditure, a program with $14 trillion over the next decade. So the next 10 years, this is part of that 10-year report, no doubt, that's going to be released later today. Medicare, a federal program that provides health insurance to seniors and some individuals with disabilities, is one of the largest and fastest growing parts of the federal budget. Medicare spending is projected to total $14 trillion net of premiums. So that's over and above all those IRMA premiums that they collect, or all of the non-IRMA premiums, the base premiums that we pay in each year as seniors if you're on Medicare, which, again, I've never wanted to be 3 months older, as bad as I do right now, because I pay a lot of money for some current medical issues, eye injections, to be clear, that are horribly expensive, at least here in Houston. And I can't wait, because Medicare apparently will cover that particular expenditure. But in any event, the Medicare hospital insurance, which is Part A, makes up two-fifths of the program in terms of expenditures. It's projected to be insolvent by the year 2036. And I know that you think about that, 2036 is, oh, that's a lifetime away. Well, what we all learn as we get older is that lifetimes happen, and they happen quicker than we think they do. And you can't just wait, although Congress seems to be they're trying to make an attempt at waiting to the last minute to fix the looming insolvency. Recently, the Congressional Budget Office released its options for reducing the deficit 2025 to 2034, which includes numerous options. Among these options are numerous policies to lower the cost of Medicare, strengthen the Part A trust fund of Medicare, and bring new revenue into the program. As part of the budget offsets bank, this is the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget making this comment. As part of our budget offsets bank, those are their ideas of how we need to attack the deficit, we have reestimated CBO's options over the fiscal year for the 2026 to 2035 budget window, and where applicable, we have estimated the effects on the hospital insurance or Part A trust fund over the next decade. We also estimate that the share of the hospital insurance shortfall the policy would close in 2033 as a proxy for its effect on the program's long-term shortfall. So I guess beyond 2033 is what they're suggesting. If it works between now and 2033, then we need to keep doing it, I believe is how I would interpret that. In any event, I'm going to let you dig in and look at this on your own, but if any of you need the link, just let me know. I'll send it to you. By the way, if you need to reach me, either here on the air or during the week, I typically don't comment on the air. I'll do it the next week, perhaps, if it's got some relevance to the content. At least you can get it into me, and if it's something that's just directly relevant, I may mention it here on the today's show. But send that text. We changed the number here recently to 713-782-1900. And again, you can leave me voicemail there, or you can just text. That's the best way to get into my world these days. 713-782-1900. Let's see. I think this is a good time as any to go ahead and take our final break, and we'll circle back momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. There's a word unto the wise. You better get to living.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, You can text him at 713-782-1900. That's 713-782-1900. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. That's Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Like the song, Bobby McGee. I'm just longing to be free. Take me where I want to be. Big dreams and fantasies. And there are many just like with big dreams and faded dreams.
To the final segment of this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And boy, when it rains, it pours. I mentioned the new number, and I've gotten half a dozen texts in the last 2 minutes. And there's one that's really relevant, and so I'm going to talk about it right now. Well, actually, there's two that I can discuss. One is someone is wanting to know when we're going to offer classes involving, I presume the understanding is it would be real estate and or tax related. And in fact, they're going to be that much for sure. And I'm going to do a third prong, which is on vacations. And you're probably thinking, well, gee, Nathan, what do vacations have to do with real estate investing and managing your tax bill? Well, you got to pay for it, right? And why are we investing in real estate if it's not for passive activity income that we can use to enjoy life as we get older? And where might you rather enjoy life than in a world-class city like Bangkok or other parts of Thailand? Or if you're already overseas, coming back to San Antonio, which is an amazing place to live, even in this woke time that we're in. And, you know, San Antonio was a little bit woke before COVID. Houston wasn't as bad, and now Houston, Dallas, etc. has run right past them. And San Antonio has stayed where it was. And San Antonio has a lot of good stuff going on. We've got a Project Marvel that looks like it's going to happen. That'll be a $4 billion sports and entertainment district downtown. New Spurs Arena, a huge expansion of the convention center, 200,000 square feet, making it a tier one facility. The Alamo Dome is going to get another $95 million upgrade or redo, and then a 1,000-room hotel, another 1,000-room hotel, all going on there at the Hemisphere area and just across the freeway. So we want to start developing some trips back and forth, since my goal is to travel several times a year back and forth. I'll kind of get back in that mode now that things have calmed down from the COVID events, and we'll be actually doing some education in Bangkok, or at least in Thailand, that we're going to try to structure in a fashion that will get you the ability to deduct it. And there are some technical criteria we have to meet where you can only get that training overseas as opposed to being available here in the U.S., in which case then you can't write off your trip. So stay tuned for that. Okay, the other question, I've got about 10 minutes to discuss this, which is probably more than I need. Let me read this again just to make sure I've got it. Oh, by the way, when we do the training that we're going to start in San Antonio, the education, we're going to have a price, of course, for tuition, but it will also include your lodging at one of my two properties. And these are not going to be large events. I'm not up for bringing 50 or 100 people in. These will be smaller groups where there will be a lot of, maybe not one-on-one, but small group training or education, to where we'll have plenty of time to address individual circumstances to the extent people are willing to share. And I know from having been a part of several of those programs as a student, sometimes you don't really want to discuss your personal details, but hey, we can find a way to make it anonymous with some examples and illustrations if I can learn more up front before we have the event that day. Okay, so the second text that I wanted to talk about is regarding your comments about converting from 401k to Roth. Why would I want, let's assume you could find one that you'd be allowed to invest in, which that's not hard. Why would I want to convert it to a Roth where none of the tax advantages of funding or maintaining a real estate investment exist? Well, first of all, the self-directed 401 pays zero tax, unlike the IRA. And you're probably thinking, well, wait a minute, I didn't know an IRA paid tax. Well, in the syndication arena, we have a little thing called UBIT, which is unrelated business income tax, that applies to retirement accounts. And it's actually not so much the UBIT tax as the subcategory of UBIT, referred to as UDFI, which is unrelated debt financed income. And I know it all sounds like a foreign language. It's very easy. If you have a mortgage on the property that you're involved with, whether you're a limited partner or a member of an LLC that's not involved in management, so effectively you're like a limited partner in a sense, or the general, or you're the lead partner, it doesn't matter. If you have debt at the partnership level or at any other level, whether you're personally guaranteeing that debt or not, and hopefully you'll never personally guarantee the debt in that setting. You might be a guarantor on qualified non-recourse debt, excuse me, but you never, at least the way I think, and you know, you can find some pretty aggressive gurus that'll tell people that, you know, hey, it's the building itself is going to provide the collateral for that loan, don't worry. Well, that's how people in the mid-80s, the development community in Houston, no less, ended up committing suicide, literally several developers back in that time frame, because they had personally guaranteed debt that they never thought they'd have to worry about. So I'm just telling you, and I don't necessarily mean to imply that you would do something that drastic as committing suicide, but you don't need to do it. The lead partner should be able to do it. And if the lead partner can't cover that, or has some partners with strong balance sheets lined up to fill those roles, you need to get another lead partner. That's not a good sign if they can't put a deal together where they've got the debt. Getting the debt handled is a big reason they're the lead partner, and they're going to get the big fees, which we won't get into now. We'll talk about them at a later time. But in any event, the 401 is the ideal vehicle, the self-directed 401, best vehicle under the tax code, period. I'm talking about between cash in your money market, where you would get all the benefits, and guess what? You're going to need them because you're going to be paying tax. Whereas the 401 doesn't pay tax. It doesn't pay the UDFI tax that applies to the IRA. Even a Roth IRA, if invested in a real estate private partnership syndication, will pay the UDFI tax. I know you're probably hearing this for the first time, unless you've listened to the show and you had no idea that you should have been filing tax returns for your Roth IRA that was participating in these apartment syndications. talk to me later if that fits you, and I'll tell you how we'll try to fix it. But bottom line is the 401, whether it's a Roth or not a Roth, will never pay the UDFI tax. Now, which tax will the what will be paid? And that's the tax when you start taking money out of the traditional pre-tax 401, out of that side of your self-directed trust. We have two sides. We established the Roth side and the pre-tax side. If you've not yet converted to Roth, so when you start taking money, and by the way, you take money whenever you're willing to pay the tax. There's no restriction, for the most part, on you accessing your funds. You don't have to be over a certain age. The 401 is a beautiful thing, and you can take money anytime you're willing to pay the tax and penalty if you're under 59 and a half, but you don't pay it on the whole thing. You pay it on the piece you take out. However, if you've undertaken the Roth conversion and you've met the five-year rules, which I won't go into on this show because we got a couple minutes left here. If it's like, let me just say, if it's a qualified distribution, which it probably will be if you work with someone like us that knows those rules, then you pay zero tax. Further, it doesn't impact the level of Social Security that you pay tax on. As you may know, if you're already collecting Social Security, you can pay tax on up to 85% of that amount if you have too much other income that's subject to the provisional tax brackets. The Roth distributions are not subject to the provisional income brackets. So you save money on the tax applicable to Social Security. You also avoid the IRMA premium increases, which is when you make too much money and you're on Medicare and you've got to pay Medicare a higher premium than the base coverage. And that's just two things I can think of. So are you really missing anything? I mean, you're not going to be paying any tax. How many deductions do you need if you're not going to be paying any tax on that, on those funds? So talk to me further if you're interested in trying to see how it would work in your specific fact patterns. Happy to look at that, and maybe we can work together to help you achieve your goals and objectives into retirement. Okay, well, we're at the end of the show. Once again, I like getting the interaction today. I think it's helpful to other people. There's, for every person that sends me a message, there's got to be 50 others that are thinking the same thing. So thanks for tuning in. We'll be back on Sunday morning, 7 a.m., right here on AM 700. And we'll be doing I believe it'll be one of our cyber versions of the Be a Planner show, and we'll talk about AI and other cybersecurity issues. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.